morning. Today's daf is daf Kuf Aleph. We're back on Kuf. We're on the top of Kuf Amud Aleph. We did actually hit a Kuf yesterday, and we did two words into Kuf. Okay, discuss the Machlokas Rishonim in terms of how Bittul Berov works, and at what point in time can you eat? Can you eat the Issa that's Mevotel in the Tarovis? And okay. Bechein Chaticha Shanavela. Okay, moving on in the Mishnah. Next point in the Mishnah is that I have a piece of nevela, a piece of non-kosher food that is in a pot. So the Mishnah tells us that all the pieces in the pot become usher. Okay? Now, that's a very strange ruling of the Mishnah. All the pieces in the pot should be usher. We have a concept called rov, and we have a concept called bittul berov. So the Gemara asks really the obvious question, v'tibata beruba. So, let there be bittul berov. So, what we learned at the end of yesterday's daf is that there's something called birya, which blocks bittul. Which means that if the item is significant, if it's an independent item, like a small bug, or, like the Gemara gave the example yesterday, like the Giranasha, so there's not going to be bittul. Birya blocks bittul. So, what we're going to be learning this morning is that there's another bittul blocker. And the other bittul blocker is something which is significant, something which is chashav. Now, the Gemara is going to frame the discussion based on a Mishnah. The Mishnah is an Arla, right? The Gemara doesn't even, this happens a number of times in Shas, the Gemara over here doesn't even quote the Mishnah in Arla. Expects that we know the Mishnah in Arla. Okay. I don't know the Mishnah in Arla that well, but I've seen this sugya enough times that you kind of get used to it. The Mishnah in Arla talks about chavilei tilson, fenugreek, and a whole bunch of other spices that do not become batel, regardless of what the numbers are. So now there are two ways to learn this Mishnah in Arla, meaning there are two actual girsos of the Mishnah. One girsa of the Mishnah is kol shadarko limanos, or the girsa of the Mishnah is es shadarko limanos. Okay, and that's significant. The difference of girsa is very significant. Because Kol Shadarko Limanos tells you that anything that's counted doesn't have to be counted all the time. But in other words, if generally people count it, it's chashuv, it's significant, it's important, and it blocks bittul. Es Shadarko Limanos tells you no, that only those things that actually mentioned in the Mishnah and Arla, those things which are always counted, and those things which are never sold by some sort of estimate, but are always sold by count, those things are chashim, and those things are subject to bittul. But if, however, there's something which sometimes is counted, sometimes is not counted, that's not chashim. So the Gemara starts off the discussion like this: Hanich lamandamer kol shadarko limano shaninu, alamandamer shadarko limano shaninu maikel lameimar. So good. So if you have the girsa in the Mishnah Arla where it's kol shadarko limano, so yeah, sometimes chatichos, pieces of meat, are sold by count. It's true. Sometimes they are. Okay, so then it's chashuv. It's what we call a davishe b'minyan. It's something that's counted, and so therefore that would block bittul. But the Gemara says, but that's good if you hold kol shadarko limanos. What if you hold es shadarko limanos? Now you're in trouble, because meat sometimes is counted, and sometimes it's just sold by weight, by estimate. So that means that it's not a davishe b'minyan. It's not something which is counted. So, if it's not something which is counted, so again, what's stopping bittul from occurring? So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you what's different. Because it is davar ha-ru'i liz kabed. You would serve it to a guest. Meaning, this is our third bittul blocker of the sugya. Right? The first one we did yesterday, it's birya. Second one we did, the beginning of today, davar she-b'minyan. And the third one is a ru'ui liz kabed, something that you would offer to your guest. There's a major discussion in the Rishonim. The Rush in the back over here discusses at length. What exactly does that mean, ru'ui liz kabed? Does it mean, thank you, does ru'ui liz kabed mean that it has to be of a certain size and it has to be prepared? Does it have to be a certain size but it doesn't necessarily already need to be prepared? Okay, much discussion exactly what the parameters are of ru'ui liz kabed. But the basic idea is that since it's something that I would serve to a guest, it now has chashivas, it's now significant, and it blocks bittul. Again, I go back to the point that I made yesterday, this idea of bittul blocking, right? So it's most probably a din derabbanan, meaning min haTorah, right? Bittul probably occurred, but the Chachamim stepped in at certain times and said we're going to block bittul, either because it's a beria or because it's a davar shebeminyan, or as we're learning right now, it's the ru'uy leis kaved, something that you would serve to a guest. Yeah, the hot dogs might not be a good example.
Because it could be a
variant. Each one is...
And you surely count them.
Right, it's a davar shebeminyan. That's another good one. Really, it's kaved. Correct. In other words, once you know your rule of bittul blocker, so it really upsets the whole concept of bittul, because there's a number of times where, yeah, in other words, bittul would be blocked. Now the Gemara points out that it's necessary to yashmin and get mishum deber yehu avachaticha imalo via yashmin and chaticha over yulis kabe balif ne'orchem aval gidim alo tzricha. And the Gemara says, look, they're different. They're different categories and they're different bittul blockers. And just because you know about birya doesn't necessarily mean you know about chaticha haru'ulis kabe and vice versa. Okay. Darash Rabba Barachana. Okay, here we go. A tough sugya coming up. Really important sugya. And it's tough. It's going to be a little bit complicated. It's not that long. It just goes to the next amud, the top of the next amud. Okay, so it's really short in terms of how much Gemara there is. It's really tough in terms of how to understand it. We'll give it a try. Darash Rabba Barba Chana Chaticha Shanavela V'Shal Dag Tame Eino Oseres Achititain Tam Berotev Uvikipa V'Chatichos. Okay, so Rabba Barba Chana Darshans. Darshans over here means, as it usually does, means he said it publicly. He broadcasted this halacha to the masses. And he said that if you have a piece of nevela or non-kosher fish, a little shrimp, right, that goes into a pot, it doesn't aser the pot unless it can give taste to everything in the pot. The rotev, the gravy, the kippah, the stuff on the bottom, chatichos, the other pieces that are in the pot. Okay, good. Pretty straightforward, meaning hard to even argue with anything he's saying. What he's saying is intuitively correct. Right. Meaning, as we know, what you need to combat is tam, is taste. Meaning, by the way, we're going to assume that you're just going to take the chaticha right out of the pot. Okay. So the, or maybe that there's enough chatichos in the pot to be mevata, the actual chaticha itself.
What at first glance doesn't make sense is that would mean that if it is only giving tam into the rotev and not into the chatichas, then you can eat the chatichas?
No, meaning that everything in the pot is going to combat the tam. That's all. Everything in the pot is going to combat the tam, which makes sense because tam is, we assume that there's going to be some distribution of the tam to everything in the pot. And so therefore, you can now, when you do your ratio and you do your calculations, so you take into account everything that's inside the pot, the gravy, the stuff on the bottom, right, the Gemara calls kippah, okay, sediment, schmutz, whatever you want to call it, right, stuff on the bottom of the pot, And the pieces themselves. Okay, pretty straightforward. Doesn't sound like anything controversial was said. Uke Rav Amora Alev Adarish. Rav sets up his Amora, right? The human microphone, meaning the Amora back then was the one who broadcasted to the masses. And Rav was not happy with this ruling of Rabba Barba Chana. And Rav says like this. Kevin Shenasan Tam Bechaticha Chaticha atzma nasas nevela ve'oseres kol ha-chatichas kulan mipnei shehein mina. So, Rav says no. Because when you cook the two pieces of meat together, meaning the nevela, the non-kosher piece, and a kosher piece, what happens is, and I'm going to read the words of the Gemara again, chaticha atzma nasa nevela, the kosher piece becomes a nevela; it becomes not kosher. The oseres kol hachatichos kulan, and therefore, what's going to now happen is that all the other pieces in the pot become aser because of min bimino, because of the idea of min bimino, mimnei shehein mina. Okay, says it straight out. Now let's make sure that we understand Rav's position very clearly. Okay, and there's going to be a number of questions. The Gemara is going to ask a number of questions, and then on top of that, we're going to add a number of questions over that as well. But what basically Rav is saying is, look, If I take two pieces, one's a nevela and one's kosher, and I cook the two of them together, what's happening is that the taste of the nevela is now getting infused into the kosher piece. That kosher piece, says Rav, now becomes nevela. Right? It becomes like, basically derived from a non-kosher animal. It becomes a chevtzo shel iser. It is prohibited. So now when that piece goes into the, when these two pieces now go into a pot, so what's going to happen? Not only the piece that originally was usur, but the newly usur piece is going to go into the pot and prohibit all the other pieces of meat based on the concept of min bimino. Okay, so the Gemara starts off with what is really a basic question. Amalei Rav Safra la'abaye mechte. So Rav Safra says to Abaye, why do I not understand? Because Rav Kaman Amar l'shmaita k'Rav Yehuda. Clearly Rav subscribes to the Rav Yehuda position. Meaning, min bimino ein abato. Right? When you have like substances get together, there's never going to be beto. So now, damar min bimino ein labato. Mayur yakina samtam, afilu kilona samtam nami. So, the question here is so basic. Meaning, the story starts with these two pieces of meat getting cooked together. And then the story continues where these two pieces of meat go into another pot. If the whole principle of Rav is based on Rav Yehuda, and mim mimina lo bato, so I really don't understand. If the nevela also went into the pot, so what do I care about the second piece? Meaning, the nevela is aser, it started off as being aser, continues to be aser, and all the other pieces in that pot, in the second pot that you cooked in, are going to be prohibited based on the simple principle of min bimino. So why did this case get so complicated and that we need, right, the two pieces get cooked together, one piece is now infusing taste into the second piece, that second piece now is nasus nevela, becomes prohibited, and now when you put the two pieces of meat in the pot, that second piece is now going to make all the other pieces usur. I don't understand. What did you gain by that second step? It doesn't make any sense. If the nevela is coming along for the ride, so the nevela should make all the pieces in the pot usur. So the question that Abai is asking is, what just happened over here? I'm sorry, Rav Safra is asking the question. What do we gain? What are we learning from that middle step of first cook the two pieces together, the nevela and the kosher, and then add it to another pot? So the Gemara says, Ki nasan tam, afil kalasan tam nami. So Amar le hacha b'may askinan b'shekadam v'silka. So Abai's answer goes like this. Now listen carefully. Abaye says, here's the story, and here's the chiddush. I cook two pieces together, two pieces of meat by itself, a kosher piece and a nevela piece. Okay. The kosher piece is now going to be receiving tam from the nevela, even though they're both the same taste. Doesn't matter. The kosher piece is going to be receiving tam from the nevela. I then take the nevela out of the pot. So all I'm left now is with that second piece, the piece that has become prohibited because it was infused with the taste of the nevela, the non-kosher. Now, that piece gets mixed in a pot. Now you understand. Now you have to say, chaticha nasa nevela, that piece becomes a nevela. Right. Now that piece becomes nevela, new iser has formed, so to say. So now, based on the principle of Rav Yehuda, of min bimina lo batel, so now all the other pieces in that pot are also going to be prohibited.
Okay. And even though that the amount of the iser is less than 1 in 60, if you were able to...
Doesn't matter. Meaning because Rav Yehuda holds min bimina lo batel. Mm-hmm. Right.
Does the Gemara deal with the pot?
No. Right now the Gemara's not interested in the pot. It's a fair question, but the Gemara's not interested in the pot. Right now the Gemara's just focusing on this principle of chaticha nasa nevela, that the meat itself becomes aser. Now, Rava Amar, now I will read on in the Gemara, but we're going to come back to this answer of Abaye. Rava Amar, afilu tema lo kidam v'selko. So Rava says, no, that's not necessary. In other words, I can even leave the original piece in the pot, and I can provide for you a chiddush. Why? Have a min umino v'davar acher. Because what's in this pot? A lot of things. When I say the pot, by the way, I mean really the second pot. A lot of things are in the second pot. Juice, right? We'll throw some vegetables in there. Meaning it's a whole pot containing all different types of food. So it's min Umino v'davar acher v'chol mino mino v'davar acher salak es mino k'mi she'eino. V'she'ein mino rabba alav u'mevat lo. So usually when that happens, so what do? I basically put the min aside. There, it's like species as if it's not there. I allow all the other substances in the pot to be mevatel, the original iser, and good. So in other words, we normally would be able to do that. So that's what the chiddush of Rav is that since that second piece becomes a chevtzo shel iser, so now I no longer can just simply say that we're mevatel the original piece, but rather we're going to have to mevatel the original piece and the second piece that comes in as well. Okay. All right. Good. So far, so good. It's only going to get a little more complicated from this point forward. So let's make sure we understand. I want to spend time with Abaye because there's a lot that's going to come out of Abaye's answer. Okay. Let me just quickly review the Gemara according to Abaye, and then we're going to take a look at Tosfos. Again, what's the Gemara saying? That I take two pieces, I cook them together first. In other words, there are two steps to this story. I take two pieces, cook them together, one's a nevela and one's kosher, right? So, the second piece is obviously going to be prohibited, obviously. What Rav is teaching us is not only is that second piece going to be prohibited, it's nasis nevela. It's going to actually become a chef social iser. It'll be not just absorbing iser, it will become iser. Good. Then I take those two pieces and I put it now into another pot. According to Abaye, I don't even have to take those two pieces. I could just simply take the second piece and put it in another pot. And now what's going to happen is that since that second piece now becomes nasis nevela, it becomes prohibited. So now all the other pieces in the pot of meat, which were kosher, are going to be prohibited based on Rav Yehuda's principle of min b'mina lo batel. If you put the first piece in, what do you mean, the nevela piece, the piece that actually is a nevela? So then, of course, then no, then of course we'll say all the pieces are also based on min b'mina lo batel.
Oh, because
the first piece is an actual nevela. The second piece is nasis nevela. No. It's all min b'mina. Min over here, min b'mina means it tastes the same. Non-kosher meat, kosher meat, pretty much tastes the same. I know kosher meat's a little saltier, but okay. Huh? That's a great question. Rashi holds like Rav Yehuda. All other Rishonim and the Halacha does not hold like Rav Yehuda. Okay, but
the second piece going to the next cooking situation would not cause any problem.
Right. Okay. Now, let's start with Tosfos. Tosfos. Now, see the big Tosfos towards the bottom of the page. Okay, it's a little bit long. We're not going to go through all of it, obviously, but I will highlight some basic points. And what comes out from Tosfos is something extraordinarily basic, and that's the following. Tosfos starts off with a very simple question: "V'shikadim v'stikos the iser," right? The imtamar, lama lishechaticha shahata kabla tam in a nevela. Tosfos says I'm not really following the whole discussion of the Gemara, meaning what the Gemara is trying to illustrate is that second piece is going to become nevela, where now if I take that second piece and add it to another pot, so then all the other pieces become prohibited. Correct? Tosfos says, I don't understand. Why did we need to point out that the second piece received taste from the first piece? Right? That part doesn't seem to make any sense. Afilu lo natna tamnami. Dahabi mina oseres becholduhu. Remember, this is all Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning Rav subscribes to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds min b'mino lo batom. So Tosfos says, even if that second piece doesn't receive taste from the first piece, second piece is going to be prohibited, right? Correct. So now I take that second piece and I put it into another pot, even without having received tam, even without having received taste, that second piece now should create problems galore, because that second piece is prohibited, going now into another pot, so all the other pieces in the other pot are also going to be prohibited. And why is this whole position of Rav predicated on, well, the second piece absorbed taste from the first piece? I don't understand. So Tosfos over here starts off with Rabbeinu Tam. Omer Rabbeinu Tam. Dinehi dehi gufa mitzvah b'chol shehu. Mikoma kom lo amrinan she tas and avela la asr kol acheros. Kevin shehi atzma lo nesra al yedei kol shehu. So Rabbeinu Tam lays down something very fundamental. And that is the following. This innovation of the Gemara chaticha nasa nevela, that a piece becomes nevela, even according to Rav Yehuda, is only going to be when it receives taste. Meaning, just because something's prohibited doesn't mean that the item itself becomes a nevela. Rav Yehuda holds min b'mina lo bato, that there's no bitul by min b'mina. That doesn't necessarily mean that every piece inside becomes a chefs or shalisser. It just simply means that I still have to acknowledge that there's isser in the pot. But not that everything itself becomes usser. Just simply, I can't eat it because the isser is right there. And it's not mevutal. It hasn't been nullified. Only when that second piece now receives the taste of the first piece, then now that second piece is nasis nevela. It actually becomes prohibited. And now I can't. Now when that piece goes into another pot, it's going to prohibit everything else. Okay. Comes out from Rabbeinu Tam that this idea of chaticha nasa nevela is by all Isurim. Clearly. Meaning, we're discussing in our Gemara the Isur of nevela, non-kosher meat. Right? Meat that was not shechted. That means that according to Rabbeinu Tam, anytime you have any food infused with the taste of Isur, so that food now is going to become Usur. Period. Meaning, not just the absorbed amount, but the entire food. The whole concept of chaticha nasa nevela applies to all Isurim. Okay? That is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Good. Then, Tosos quotes Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim haya omer mitoch kach afilu kinatna batam ein ahetu nasa nevela sheyitzarch shishim keneged kol chaticha elad keneged ha'isar habalua. Rabbeinu Ephraim, by the way, earlier than Rabbeinu Tam, right? I believe so. I believe Rabbeinu Ephraim was even earlier. Rabbeinu Ephraim says, no, that even when there's taste that was transferred from the Isser to the Heter doesn't become an item of Usser, meaning you don't create Isser, that's not what's happening. But says Rabbeinu Ephraim, the only thing that's happening is that you've now, that piece that was infused with taste is infused with taste. That's all that happened. Enough so that when that piece goes into another pot, you're going to have to take into account that taste that's infused into the piece. But it's not that the whole piece becomes usser. It's just the amount that was infused. I don't know if I'm making myself perfectly clear. Let's illustrate this with the following example. Okay, simple example. Okay, I'm cooking two pieces of meat together. One is, let's just deal with numbers. One piece is made up of 30-ounce piece of meat, kosher. The other piece that I cook in that pot is 1 ounce of nevela. By accident, I put in 1 ounce of nevela. Okay, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that piece of kosher meat becomes usser. How much of it becomes usser, according to Rabbeinu Tam?
All of it.
All of it becomes usser. Even though you know that it has not been infused with any more than 1 ounce of kosher meat, according to Rabbeinu Tam, all of it becomes usser. You've created isser, chaticha nasa nevela. According to Rabbeinu Tam now, that 30-ounce piece of meat, kosher meat, falls into another pot. How much do you need to be mevatalit? 30 times 60. According to Rabbeinu Tam. According to Rabbeinu Ephraim, not true. According to Rabbeinu Ephraim, if I cook these two pieces of meat together, the 1 ounce piece of nevela with the 30-ounce piece of kosher, how much isser was infused? Only 1 ounce. So if that now 30-ounce piece of meat falls into another pot, how much do I need to be mevatalit? 60 ounces. Major difference. Major difference between Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Ephraim. Okay. Now, in other words, please read on in Tosfos. There's much more discussion over here. According to Rabbeinu Ephraim, this whole principle of chaticha nasas nevela doesn't really apply by other Isurim. You can't generate more Isur than there already was, according to Rabbeinu Ephraim. When is it true, according to Rabbeinu Ephraim, that we have this idea of Chati Chanasa Nevela? Only in one scenario. Only in one area of Isser V'Heter. No. Meat and milk. Right? Basar V'Chalav. Rabbeinu Ephraim says that if Basar V'Chalav, there we have the principle of Chati Chanasa Nevela. For obvious reasons. Because the meat by itself is mutter. The milk by itself is mutter. So when I take the two and I combine the two together, it yields Isser. Only because I combine the two. I take an ounce of meat, I cook it with an ounce of milk. How much Isser do I have? 2 ounces. Right. That, according to Rabbeinu Ephraim, that's the only time where we're going to say Chaticha Nasa Nevela. But by these other Isserim, like Rabbeinu Ephraim says, like our case over here, the derivative meat is not going to be any more Isser than the source of where the Isser came from. Good. And by the way, the halacha, right, so who do we follow? So here, again, the basic Yeridea. So this is a split between the Sephardim and the Ashkenazim. Sephardim follow like Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rosh Shulchan Aruch follows like Rabbeinu Ephraim. That we're only going to say Chaticha Nasa Nevela only by meat and milk. We're not going to say it by Shar Yisurim, by other Yisurim. Whereas according to Rabbeinu Tam, which is followed by the Ramah, we're going to say Chaticha Nasa Nevela by all Yisurim. Even though, by the way, it's in other words, in the context of our Gemara, we were discussing it within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so as I pointed out just a moment ago, we don't follow like Rabbi Yehuda. We say that there's bitta by Ben Bimino. But at least in the concept of Chanan, Chatichanas and Nevela, we follow, when I say we, the Shulchan Aruch follows like Rabbeinu Ephraim, that it's not going to be any greater than the source, and the Ashkenazim follow like Rabbeinu Tam, that the whole thing is going to be also even by Shari Surim. Yes? No, no, it's not right. But no, but in the scenario I gave, meaning I know I gave a very clinical case. And usually life is not that simple. But in the scenario I gave, where I cooked 1 ounce of non-kosher meat with 30 ounces of kosher meat, so Rabbeinu Ephraim will tell you, it's the even though that second piece is prohibited because it was infused with taste, but not more than 1 ounce, not more than 1 ounce. How do you know that? Because the non-kosher piece only started off as 1 ounce. The taste that's being generated can't be greater than that piece.
We still
know
which piece to eat.
No, of course you're not going to eat either piece. That's not the point. You're right. But if I were now to take that 30-ounce piece of meat and throw it into another pot, so according to Rabbeinu Ephraim, I only have to negate 1 ounce of Isser. You're right. I don't know where that Isser is, by the way. And you're right that I would never be able to eat that 30-ounce piece of meat. You're right.
But the thing is, it's not going to be question of the status. You know, when you add that 30 to the 1 ounce,
yeah,
the status of that is either vital or not vital. If it's not vital, then the status is that it becomes part of the forbidden food.
So you're now sounding like Rabbeinu Tam.
Right. It's not a question of grade, but the question of status of this mixture together is either permitted or not permitted.
Correct. That's the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is saying that this meat that becomes prohibited, the 30-ounce pieces, now has a status. And the status of being usher. Good. So you understand Rabbeinu Tam. So I'm telling you, Rabbeinu Ephraim disagrees.
He says, Awe Tuma and daughter of Tuma is like, isn't this almost similar?
Right. It's like, right. In other words, it's, right. How do we look at derivatives? I mean, that's, you know, we ask the question a lot in the Daf Yomi, but in this particular context, you understand. I understand Rabbeinu Ephraim, meaning you can't say that something is more isser, more usher. Than its source.
But it's not a question of being more usher. It's a question of looking at the status. Of
correct,
the
correct. So you're
one item has to nullify the other.
It doesn't make sense. You're Sephardic, and you see Rabbeinu Tam. You see Rabbeinu Tam so clearly. Okay. All right. Let's continue in the Gemara. All right. So big topics.
In this example, if there was a 1 ounce in 60 to begin with, there was no problem.
Right. Then there would be no problem. Because then correct. Because then you were mevatel the taste, and since you're mevatel the taste, that's it. There's no.
Need, for the next one, we only need another 30.
Correct. You wouldn't need anything. Meaning.
No. If it goes to another 30, we have 1 to 30. The whole thing's bad. But right. If the whole thing goes to another 30, then we are okay. Based on the Sephardim.
Right. For Rabbeinu Ephraim, you're correct. But the original okay. Yes, but it gets a little more complicated than that. But correct. Okay. All right, let's start with the new Mishnah. The new Mishnah is going to deal with which animals are subject to the Issur of Gid Anasha. Okay? Kosher animals, for sure. Right? The Issur of Gid Anasha. So you have a behema. Behema here in the world of Gid Anasha includes a chai as well. So sciatic nerve is going to be prohibited. What about my non-kosher animals? Now, it's a funny discussion because by non-kosher animals, you're not allowed to eat the animal to begin with. Right? Right? So it's an academic question, really, because by non-kosher animals, I can't eat the animal. It may not be such... I mean, the chances of us eating the sciatic nerve of a non-kosher animal. But I'm saying, but even from a lambda standpoint, right, there's much to question over here. Now, eating the Gid Anush of a non-kosher animal, first of all, and again, the points I'm about to make now in this introduction are all going to come up in the Gemara, but I just want you to hear it outside first. The Gid Anush, is it a food? I know it's a funny question, but we've asked this question before. We've asked this question before, and we said machlokas, really. We said, correct. You're correct. The bottom line is no. Right? That was a halacha. But the Mishnah that we quoted previously says, yesh begidim benosin tam, that it has taste. And the Brisa says, ain begidim benosin tam. So the question of, is the Gid Anush a food? Subject to a machlokas amongst the Tanayim. This impacts a Gid Anush of a non-kosher animal. Meaning, if the Gid Anush has tam, so then...
You don't quite define as food if it does. If it has tam, it becomes food.
The answer is yes. The simple answer is yes. You're going to see the Gemara is basically going to say it. I'm just kind of introducing. So if it has tam, so then yeah. So then I'm not allowed to eat the muscle, the meat of a non-kosher animal. I'm not allowed to eat the Gid Anush as well. If the Gid Anush doesn't have tam, do you remember what the Gemara referred to it earlier in the Masechta? It's a piece of wood. It's a piece of wood. It just happens to be that if you like to chew that piece of wood of a kosher animal, you're going to get malchus for eating Gid Anush. But it's wood. It's not food. So if you take that and you take it now to a non-kosher animal, you're not eating food, right? And the only thing the Torah prohibits is to eat the meat of a non-kosher animal. You want to chew on...
Isn't that a piece of
non kosher
animal's meat, isn't it considered
nevela? It's not. I mean, if it didn't, it may be considered nevela, but there's a prohibition of behema tamea, meaning it's not kosher.
But is it too much nevela that's forbidden, or is it different?
It'll give off tuma, but that's irrelevant to our discussion. Our discussion is the iser achila, the prohibition to eat it. The prohibition to eat it is not based on the fact that it's a nevela. It's more fundamental. It's not a kosher species.
So I'm sure yes. In a case of life or death situation, you have to eat this meat.
Okay, that's fine. Enjoy it. So no egg. I mean, if you can, no egg b'taharas ve'eino no egg b'tmeya. Okay, so the Tanna Kamma says that this issur of Gid Anush applies to kosher animals. It doesn't apply to non-kosher animals. Good. Rav Yehuda Omer af b'tmeya. Rav Yehuda says the issur of Gid Anush applies even to non-kosher animals as well. I'm Rav Yehuda Avalo Mibnei Yaakov Nesar Gid Anush V'Adayim Behema Tmeya Muteres. And then Rav Yehuda advances an argument. And here's the argument. Bnei Yaakov. So they were told not to eat the Gid Anush.
Were they?
Right. Correct. Perfect question. Were they? Well, we know that the Issur was placed back in Parshas Vayishlach. So Rav Yehuda is making a leap, an assumption. Well, since the Parsha is back in Vayishlach, it must be that Bnei Yaakov were told, don't eat the Gid Anush. And then the Mishnah writes, V'adayin behema tamei muteris. And they were allowed to eat non-kosher animal. Now, in other words...
Correct.
On the issue of, did the Avos keep all the mitzvos? The answer is, it is so unclear. It is so unbelievably unclear whether the Avos kept the mitzvos or not. But here, I'm pointing to a Mishnah that says straight out that the Avos were allowed to eat non-kosher animal. So wherever you stand on the issue, you may have a personal opinion on the matter. All right, I'm more than willing to entertain. But wherever you stand on the issue, the Mishnah says straight out, they were allowed to eat behemoth tamea, the Bnei Yaakov. And yet, the Gittin Asher was prohibited.
And yet, Yaakov married two sisters.
And Yaakov married two sisters. Okay, so again, I don't want to get into that topic. That's a topic in of itself. But here's Rav Yehuda's argument. They're allowed to eat non-kosher animals, and the Torah forbade them not to eat the Gittin Asher. Oh, so it must be that the Gittin Asher applies to non-kosher animals. Okay, I know there's so many leaps. Right, so many jumps on that argument, but that's the argument Rav Yehuda provides. Amru lo, so they say to Rav Yehuda, right, it's just such a basic debate taking place in this Mishnah. Amru lo, b'sina namar ala shenichta b'mkamo. What? Meaning, yes, you may find the Isra in Parshas Vayishlach, but the mitzvah was not given until Sinai. And then when Moshe sat down and wrote the Torah, this is exactly how Rashi is describing it, and when Moshe sat down and wrote the Torah, he said, well, right, the mitzvah was given at Sinai, but contextually, it fits back in Parshas Vayishlach. So what I'll do, says Moshe, and right, did this on his own, he did this with Ruach HaKodesh, you'll have to assume more the latter than the former. But then what Moshe did is then he took the Parsha and he put it back in Vayishlach. Not because it actually was commanded at that point in time, just simply because that's where it fits.
The source.
That's right, that's where it fits. But that's not where it was commanded. It was commanded at Sinai. Okay.
So you're agreeing with our Yehuda? In terms of that the sons of Yaakov ate?
Oh, in terms of that point? Yeah. The Gemara doesn't challenge that point. I'm sorry, the Mishnah doesn't challenge that point. Look, the Mishnah is just, just providing, bullet points.
But a few days ago, that whole story about how the brothers went to Yosef, they actually have to check the Shechita and all that?
Understood. I'm telling you, one of the biggest, you could spend a lot of time trying to figure out if the Avos kept the mitzvot or did not keep the mitzvot. I've heard that approach. Right. I don't know who to attribute it to. I've heard that approach. That they kept the mitzvahs, but not because they were commanded to do so, but because
that's the rabbit's approach.
How do they know about it? Who told them?
Right. Okay. All right. 22 years. 22 years he studied in yeshiva. 22 years studying in yeshiva and shem. Now, if he did daf yomi, now I'm not saying he did daf yomi, but if he did, that gave him three cycles of daf yomi. You remember the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, we really need to go on. Remember the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that Avram Avinu, we have five chapters of Avodah Zarah.
Oh, yeah.
Avram Avinu, if I remember correctly, Avram Avinu had 400 chapters. Of Avodah Zarah, meaning that right. So the Daf Yomi spent a lot of time in Avodah Zarah, and I don't know how much time on Chulin. Okay, again, these are things. It's hard. It's hard to put your finger on it. These are difficult issues. Okay, we continue with the Gemara. Okay, and get ready. We're going to see this topic again and again throughout Shas. It's one of the bigger topics that we deal with in Shas. The more times I say it over, I understand it better. So I feel like, with every passing opportunity of Isser Chalal Isser, I actually start to understand it. So if you're hearing it now for the first, second, or even third time, just I'm assuring you that it does get easier after a while. Savra of Yehuda Isser Chalal Isser V'atanya. So the Gemara says, now, what about the fact that it's Isser Chalal Isser? Meaning, we're talking about a non-kosher animal, already Isser. We're talking about overlaying on top of that the Isser of Gittin Asher. You cannot superimpose one Isser on top of another Isser. Ain Isser Chalal Isser. So, and the Gemara says, V'atanya, Rav Yehuda, Omer, Yachol Tein, Nevela, Sof, Tamei, Metamei, Begadam, Bebeis, Abliya. What if I eat the carcass of a non-kosher bird? Right? Nevela, Sof, Tamei. Non-kosher bird that did not receive a Shechita. Okay, so in other words, it's Nevela, Sof. It's the carcass of a dead bird. And this dead bird happens to be an ostrich. Happens to be an eagle, right? A vulture. But right, let me say it correctly. It happens to be a vulture. So am I going to receive tumas beis hablia? Meaning, we know that you become tame by ingesting the food. Now that's limited to kosher birds. How do I know that it doesn't apply to non-kosher birds? Tamalom or nevela trefa lo yochala tamaba. Mishi yisur mishum ba tochal nevela. Yes, it says, shi yisur mishum ba tochal nevela. El mishum ba tochal temea. Here, it's already prohibited. So you're not going to layer on another prohibition on top of an already existing prohibition. Good. That is, and by the way, who's the author of that statement? Rav Yehuda. So you see that Rav Yehuda holds Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. So what's going on in our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that you have a non-kosher animal, and he's superimposing the Gid Anasha on top of already a non-kosher animal. So the Gemara makes a smart suggestion, and that is that Rav Yehuda holds that a Gid Anasha doesn't have taste. So in other words, it's not food. It's not meat.
You're not eating it
as a non-kosher animal because it's not actual meat. It has no taste.
No, no, there is.
Ah, so, and so when you're not overlaying, meaning what Rav Yehuda will object to is overlaying one Isser on top of another Isser. But over here, if the Gid Anasha has no taste, so then it's not Usser because it's a Behemoth Tamea. It's nothing. And now along comes the Gid Anasha, and Gid Anasha is going to...
Didn't we say that next sentence? Was that if the other chal is like greater?
Wait. We're going to get there. V'sav Rav Yehuda ain't beginning minos and tava hatanya, but the Gemara says, but we know that's not true. Meaning that Rav Yehuda holds that the Gid Anasha has taste. V'hatanya ha'ochel Gid Anasha shabehema tamei Rav Yehuda mechayev shtayim Rav Yishem and poter. So if you eat the Gid Anasha of a non-kosher animal, Rav Yehuda says you're going to get malchus two times over. Okay, meaning one for eating a non-kosher animal, another one for eating the Gid Anasha. Clearly, Rav Yehuda holds that the Gid Anasha has tam. Otherwise, you wouldn't be getting malchus for eating a non-kosher animal if the Gid Anasha had no taste. Now, by the way, Rabbi Shimon says that you're off the hook, meaning you didn't eat Gid Anasha and you didn't eat non-kosher animal. Okay, come back to Rabbi Shimon in just a moment. Just give me a moment. Let's finish this thread. La'olam kasav yesh begimenos in tam. The kasavar noheg b'shalil. So the Gemara now tries a new approach. Maybe what Rav Yehuda's feelings are is that the Gid Hanasha becomes prohibited in utero. And so now we can make the argument that the Isser Behema Tamea is coming together at the same time as this baby is forming in utero. It's coming at the same time as the Isser Gid Anasha, because Gid Anasha applies in utero. And we know that even though I cannot layer one Isser on top of another Isser, but if they're coming in simultaneously, that works. Well, me matzah zamer noeg b'shal v'hatanan. So the Gemara says, but we learned in the Mishnah, noeg b'shal Rav Yehuda meinu noeg b'shal b'v'chal b'mutter. So Rav Yehuda says straight out that the Isser of Gid Anasha does not apply to a fetus in utero. Right? So, correct, because it's part of the mother. So the Gemara is saying, so how can you make that suggestion? So the Gemara says, the Gemara sidesteps. So that is only true by a kosher animal, where we view the fetus as part of the mother. Because the Torah says, but when it comes to a non-kosher animal, noheg. So the Isser of Gid Anasha would apply even in utero. The Gemara attacks this from another perspective, and that is the actual formation of the fetus inside. We made this point earlier in the Masechta. We're reviewing. We learned on the Mishnah. The Mishnah Nazir says that if a Nazir were to come into contact either with human remains or even a kezias of human remains, he now becomes Tameh and he's got to start counting all over again. The Kashilan. Now, after learning that Mishnah Nazir, we asked a very basic question. That Mishnah doesn't make any sense. If he's starting over again for just a kezias of human remains, so then of course he's going to have to start counting if he comes into contact with an entire human remain. So Rav Yochanan says, you know what the Mishnah is talking about? He comes into contact with a stillborn. Right? A fetus that was aborted very early in its development. How early? It didn't even develop its sinews yet. So you see, based on this Rav Yochanan explanation of the Mishnah Nazir, that in fetus development, the sinews are developed at a later stage of fetal development. Ama Isser Tumakadim. So what do you see from that Mishnah? It's very clear. Again, from the Rav Yochanan explanation in the Mishnah, that first the animal develops inside, then the sinews come, then the gidim come. So the Gemara says, "Avgav deser to makadim asi iser chayala shekain isuro noheg bivnei noach." Now the Gemara finally gets to our argument, which is that it's more inclusive. If the second iser is more inclusive, so now it's going to be able to overlay. How is it more inclusive over here? Shekain isuro noheg bivnei noach, but because it applies to bnei noach. Dekanami diktani. In fact, you really know that is Rav Yehuda's argument. All you need to do is just go back to the Mishnah, read the Mishnah again, and the Gemara quotes diktani. I'm Rav Yehuda. Valom ibnei Yaakov nesar gina rasha v'adayim beema tameim uteres lahem. Oh, that's it. Meaning that's the explanation of Rav Yehuda. Normally he holds a nisr chalal iser, and yes he holds that gidim have taste, and yes he holds that it applies to the fetus, but so what? Meaning the sinews develop at a later point in time. The answer to the simple question of how can you overlay one iser on top of another is that when that second iser adds a dimension, in this particular case, what dimension does it add? Because behemoth tamei is only usher to Jews. Giranasha, according to Rav Yehuda, is a universal iser. It applies to Bnei Noach. But Bnei Yaakov at the time were not Jews. They were not Bnei Yisrael. I know they were Bnei Yisrael. But they were not... they were literally Bnei Yisrael. They were not figuratively Bnei Yisrael. Correct. No. It's okay. It's a good check. No, the Pasuk says it applies to Alkein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael. What's Rav Yehuda going to do with that?
I heard one explanation that before Matan Torah, it applies to everybody, and after Matan Torah, it's exclusive to the Jews.
Okay, possibly. Again, that's all good. That's not Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says it applies to Bnei Noach, and that's why you can have one Isser.
Where does it get it from, though? If the Pasuk said Bnei Israel, how does it get it to Bnei?
Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, I'm just going to argue. We got to finish with this point. We're just going to argue this according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is going to tell you that the Isser was given to Bnei Yisrael, meaning the actual sons of Yaakov. Right, we'll call them. How about this? In order not to confuse, we'll call them Bnei Yaakov. Right, the mitzvah was given to Bnei Yaakov. At that point in time, they weren't Am Yisrael; they were just another. They were just like any other person in the world. They were Bnei Noach at that time, and since they were Bnei Noach at that time, so that means then that this Isser applies universally to all Bnei Noach. That's Rav Yehuda's argument. You don't have to agree with it. I'm just saying that's the argument of Rav Yehuda.
It's Bnei Yisrael, it's not
Bnei Yaakov. Okay, correct. All right, we'll pause over here. Well, I know we're a little bit behind, but we'll make time to catch up. Okay, tomorrow more Isser Chalal Isser. If that doesn't come, beg you to come back, I don't know what does.